Well, when ancient man went traveling through the great culture area of the Mediterranean, Aegean Sea, he was also a tourist, seeking points of interest. And as a result of the common attitude of the time, seven great examples of early ingenuity and handicraft came to be recognized as the wonders of the ancient world. These wonders all come under the general collective concept of art architecture. They were monuments, structures erected by skilled craftsmen for various memorial purposes, and in the passing of time, sanctified by the common applause of mankind. Of these ancient monuments, only one survives to the present time. And even in the earlier days, you had to have traveled at a rather strategic period in order to see all of them. For the great figure of the sun god at the entrance to the harbor of Rhodes, the Colossus, only stood for 56 years. Therefore, there was only this brief period in which you could see all of these marvels. But the ruins and remains of them were visible for long periods of time, so that even these ruins came to be regarded as worthy of special travel and perhaps even hazardous adventure in order to see them. Actually, it would appear that these seven wonders were utterly unrelated. They were built at different times by different people for different purposes. Yet as we classify them and arrange them, it appears also that a pattern is traceable. And from the old opinion records comes the conviction that accidentally or intentionally, the seven wonders formed a kind of miniature solar system. That these monuments actually did not overlap in their meanings and purposes. And though built by entirely different groups, they formed a complementary arrangement, actually sacred to the seven planets recognized by the ancients. Now it is quite possible that within the structure of a people, a rather closely knit cultural group, as we know at that time, that these monuments were archetypal symbols. They represented one of the earliest expressions of man's instinct to externalize concepts and ideas within himself. There have been waves and levels of this process of externalization, and we're going to try to follow the various levels by comparing one group of productions with another. If we may assume, therefore, that as archetypal dreams arise within man, and these dreams take on symbolic forms, that the great accumulation of structures known as the seven wonders actually represents a sevenfold symbolic dream coming forth out of man at an early age of his culture and having a real and deep meaning that survives in the life of modern man, even today, under certain psychic intensities, the individual will have archetypal and architectural dreams. He will see temples and palaces and monuments and towers even as symbolic of his own psychic nature. And it is quite conceivable that the psychic or folk pressure of man at one time produced this tremendous monument building intensity. It is diffused throughout the world. There is no part of the earth in which men have not raised monuments to various abstract ideas, these monuments being actually their own symbolic vestments which they have given to principles or beliefs or concepts which they regarded as important. Everywhere, therefore, we find the ruins and remains of ingenuity, of great structural intensity. We find them in Egypt, and we also recognize the great monolithic monuments of the Druidic period of Britain and Gaul. We find these monuments in China, in India, Persia, and all other foreign ancient peoples. There are traces of them, in fact, almost more than traces, in our North American culture. And in the Central American and Southern part of our hemisphere, there were magnificent architectural achievements, bearing witness to some kind of a forming pressure in man. Thus, architecture comes very close to archetypes, and nearly all archetypes as concepts within man have their architectural expression through the great basic arts and sciences which also arise within the individual. So I made a little list here of a number of parallels concerning these pressures in man, relating them to the original group of monuments and extending the pattern through the ages to represent man's moral and ethical growth. And perhaps we do have here some key or some clue to something of value. Now, of course, after we leave the ancient monuments, which are held in common esteem, we enter a controversial series of patterns. In preparing later septenaries, many different structures could be selected. It would not be necessary to select merely the ones which I have more or less chosen. On the other hand, whether we select differently or not, we are selecting from the same fields of human activity. We may choose one building as more significant than another, but the tremendous symbolic pressure behind the concept of monuments remains regardless of the particular choice. We may also advance different branches of learning, but if these be correctly advanced, they seem to form a basic pattern, indicating how man operates from within his own nature. And as the patterns continue on down to the most contemporary activities of man, it seems that they may have some definite value for us. Now, the original group of ancient monuments were unquestionably dedicated to various deities or to the attributes of deities as represented in the heroic achievements of human beings. The first of the great monuments in its natural concept order would be the Colossus of Rhodes. This is the figure that stood at the entrance to the harbor of the city of Rhodes in ancient times, existing and standing for some 56 years, and afterwards having fallen, remaining as a fallen wonder for several hundred years. This figure was 106 feet in height, composed of brass overlaid with gold. It was a symbol and form of the sun god, and one hand was raised holding up a torch which lighted the entrance to the harbor. That has been the old story that the feet of the image were placed on each side of the harbor on a pedestal so that ships entered the harbor between the feet, This, however, is most unlikely. All the older records seem to imply that it merely stood at the entrance of the harbor. The only likenesses that may be regarded as authentic of many of these marvels will be found upon early coinage. And the coinage of Rhodes at the period of the Colossus show the head of the image surrounded by a nimbus of solar rays. That this deity or this sun god was a monument to the solar deity cannot be doubted. Therefore, we start our series or sequence of images and monuments sacred to the planet. There could be no doubt about the first of these. Later, the great confederation of communities and cities that worshiped the deity Diana resolved to unite together and form a common center of worship. Ephesus was selected for the site of this great temple, and the several states united to construct the second of the great wonders, namely the Temple of Diana at Ephesus. This is regarded as one of the most beautiful monuments ever created on a religious level. It not only represented the adoration of Diana, the goddess of the moon, it represented an early effort at adoration through union, through the coming together of different peoples, and the creation of a sanctified ground in which many persons of different political groups could unite in the worship of their deity. This building was destroyed by vandalism, and it is said that it was brought to ruin by a madman who conceived that if he burned this temple, he could never be forgotten by history. His villainy would make him immortal. It has done so, because he has been remembered, but always with a certain bitterness, because he destroyed so noble and beautiful a structure for no valid or important reason. The third monument that we should mention was created by the artist Phidias. After his exile from Athens, he went to Olympia, and here he created his great figure of the Olympian Zeus, the largest and most impressive of the religious figures of ancient Greek worship. This Zeus was a seated figure within a great temple and carried in one hand a scepter and in the other hand a globe surmounted by the figure of Minerva or Athena. The figure was composed of some unknown substance, perhaps metal, perhaps stone, but it was overlaid over the robes with pounded gold, and the face and hands and exposed parts were made of ivory. It was a magnificent achievement in the art world. And by the name of it, and by the very circumstances, it is obvious that it was intended to represent Jupiter, one of the great family of planets, one of the great gods. And it is interesting that in these seven wonders, there are no two dedicated to the same deity or to the same concept. Therefore, the evidence that some pattern, organization, or order was beneath the grand conception. How such a pattern could have come into existence might seem strange to us. But in those days, the creation of monuments was restricted to a group. There was a group called the Dionysian Artificers. They were the initiate priest artisans of the Temple of Architecture. They were set aside by obligations and oaths. They were bound to secret knowledge and lore. And regardless of who employed them, it seems that the idea for the seven wonders must have originated among such a group. And as this group extended its influence throughout all the areas where these monuments stand, it is quite possible that they were the organizing power which brought these monuments together into a pattern. and that they had resolved to glorify the universe. And as various commandments or commissions came to them to build, they introduced the necessary symbolism, perhaps without even the knowledge of those who commissioned the buildings. It is very possible that the entire procedure was due to this group of initiate builders. The next monument is said to have been dedicated to the deity Saturn, and this was the Pharos of Alexandria, the great lighthouse that stood at the entrance to the harbor of the city of Alexandria in North Africa. The Pharos was a wonderful structure, over 600 feet in height, and composed entirely of white marble. It stood for quite a long time, and the ruin of it was visible as late as the 14th century of the Christian era. It had at the top an arrangement for the building of great signal fires, in order that ships at sea, a long way off, could see the fire burning on the top of this column and be led to safety. Therefore, the Pharos was actually a lighthouse, and it was one of the earliest examples of this type of construction. It is remembered also that during the Roman wars in Egypt, this Pharos was at one time the refuge of Julius Caesar. It was a wonderful structure, and because it was the tallest and rose in the most impressive spire, the ancients declared that it was associated with the deity Saturn. Another tremendous and magnificent architectural endeavor was the creation of the great Babylonian gardens. These are supposed to have been ordered and designed in connection with the symbolism of Semiramis, queen of Babylon. Actually, we know now that this queen was an embodiment or personification, at least in symbolism, of the concept of the planet Venus. It was a great symbol of beauty and of artistry and of the glory of creative idealism. Semiramis has been very difficult to trace historically as a queen. She becomes practically a mythological person, and as a mythological person was an extension of the power of Venus. These gardens consisted of a great pyramidal structure rising in levels or stages, each of the levels magnificently planted with all kinds of rare and glorious flowers and trees and things of that nature. And on the very top level of the pyramid was an enormous reservoir, which was used to collect the water necessary to water the entire garden. It was a beautiful example of man's earliest concept of horticultural and botanical accumulation. It was also involved in science and was important on a scientific level because it brought knowledge of the growth of plants and trees and shrubs from all parts of the world that were gathered there, and also used to increase the medicinal knowledge that men had of the use of plants and things of that nature. The Hanging Gardens, so-called, of Babylonia are therefore considered among the great wonders of the world. Now we should pause a moment in connection with go back to the Pharos of Alexandria, the great lighthouse, because this is an alternative to one other monument that is said to have been of equal value or significance from the standpoint of planetary rulership. It being held by some writers that instead of the great lighthouse of Alexandria, this concept of the deity Saturn rightfully belongs to Solomon's temple. So this has been considered as an alternative, the great temple complex on Mount Moriah in Jerusalem. The Temple of Solomon was not a great structure in itself, but the enormous platforms upon which it stood, the tremendous architectural skill of the builders in arranging the buildings surrounding the temple and setting forth the entire complex in the pattern of the ancient Jewish religion, caused These endeavors and achievements caused the building to be regarded as an alternative, and in some lists it takes the place of the Pharos of Alexandria. Now the next structure that comes naturally to us is the magnificent tomb of King Mausolus. This is so called the Mausoleum at Halicarnassus. This word, mausoleum, from the king Mausolus, is now the root of our common term, mausoleum, as a name for a place for the reposing of the remains of honored dead. This great king was a magnificent warrior. He did a great deal to unite and bind together his peoples. He was an astute leader. And his tomb is said to be a monument to the planet Mars, as being the monument to the warrior in the group we have mentioned. This structure was a large cubical structure with extensions and towers, and surmounting the roof of it was also a pyramid, and on the top of this pyramid, a magnificent golden statue of King Mausolus. This structure has disappeared. We have no actual trustworthy representations of it. But from the ancient report, a reasonable reconstruction is possible. The next and last of these wonders, then, is that which relates to the planet Mercury. And all Egypt and other nations agree that this wonder belongs primarily by right to the great complex of pyramids at Giza, particularly the Great Pyramid, and that this was a monument to the god of wisdom, to the god of knowledge and the god of letters, that it actually represented the entire epitome of ancient learning, for into it were built the principles of the known arts and sciences of the day. It was therefore sanctified to the messenger of the gods, to the mysterious winged deity Hermes. If we consider this group, then, we observe that we have a pattern, a very well-defined, organized group of symbols, that they form a kind of cluster. And while, of course, in ancient times there was much travel necessary between them, if we look at them from today, they are only in a comparatively small region brought together with an amazing amount of ingenuity. Now, there were other great buildings of the old world, but they have never seriously competed with these. These constitute a set apart, and that they should have been so selected in the presence of such other possibilities as the Roman Forum or the Circus Maximus or the Colosseum or the Acropolis at Athens or other tremendous achievements, that these should not be included, but only the seven wonders, and bound to the very important number seven, seems to indicate that there was an intent and a purpose behind this selection. Now, there's one point in this that I think we should also bear in mind, namely that all of these wonders represent actually architectural or art achievements. They really do not give to us a full understanding in themselves of the achievements of antiquity. They do tell us, beyond all doubt and question, that the peoples producing these monuments were highly advanced in many arts and sciences. But when we look back upon antiquity, we are rather too prone to look back upon monuments, rather than to look back upon the more living memorials that descend to us through the achievements of people. Therefore, paralleling these seven with equivalents derived from the intellectual and moral life of man, we come to another great group of contributions by which antiquity is remembered, monuments that stand perhaps even more powerfully than the symbolic shrines that we have described. So I made a list here of some of the other contributions in relationship to the seven wonders. So we can take this particular group. We can parallel the seven wonders with seven forms of learning to which we are peculiarly indebted to antiquity. As the most obvious and direct reference to the planet and to the luminaries is found in the Colossus of Rhodes, which was the sun god. We can also find that we can parallel this statue with a great science that came down from the past, namely the science of astronomy. The Colossus of Rhodes gives us an archetypal concept of astronomy. By its structure and by its integration, the temple of Diana of Ephesus, the lunar temple, parallels music. The great Phidian figure of Zeus, the Zeus of Olympus, under the planet Jupiter, gives us the archetypal structure of law as jurisprudence or legislation. The Pharos of Alexandria, the great lighthouse of Saturn, the tallest and the most illuminating of all the monuments, mathematics, the mother of sciences, the beginning of organized knowledge. Outstanding in the system also, the temple or memorial of King Mausolus, the mausoleum of Halicarnassus, under the rulership of Mars, ties to the principle of architecture and the hammering and cutting and chiseling of stone. The marvelous structure of the hanging gardens of Babylonia bind with the concept of art. And the pyramid, ruled over by Hermes with his caduceus, reminds us also of another great art of the ancients, medicine. So out of antiquity, we have secured not only these ruined physical monuments, but we have also received psychological monuments. Monuments upon which we have built as foundations, but we are indebted to and dependent upon the skill of ancient man for the foundations of all sciences and arts known today. So the seven great arts and sciences of the ancients, astronomy, music, law, mathematics, architecture, art, and medicine, constitute another heritage out of the past. A heritage of enduring human achievement. Now, we also know that the ancients gave us not only this concept of sciences and arts, but a directive in connection with the use of them. We realize that they represented these arts as having been bestowed by deities for the purpose of assisting humanity to achieve its birthright. And that in ancient times, all sciences and arts were dedicated to the service of deity. And consequently, the artisan was also a priest, one in whose life and nature a great gratitude, a wonderful thankfulness, and a wonderful humility is shared with knowledge in dominating his concepts. Therefore, astronomy was more than the mere study of the visible heavens. It was the study of the anatomy and physiology of God, the discovery of the tremendous universal mystery whose body nature is and God the soul. Therefore, with reverence, the sciences were advanced. Music was the art which gave man the concept of universal harmony. It had to do with order and integration. It had to do with vibration, whether the ancient was fully aware of the term or not. He worshipped through music. He grew through music. He felt the tremendous importance of this harmonic structure of sound, and he dedicated it to the service of his God and to the various rituals and rites and ceremonies of religion. Gradually, we have come to secularize most of these branches of learning. But even today, of course, Music is closely related to religion, and sacred music is among the greatest of our musical compositions. The next concept that we have is law. This law, which was originally the will of the gods for their creatures. Law embodied in the great person of Zeus, the arch deity, the Cosmocrator, the father of gods and men. Zeus with his thunderbolt, punishing the lawbreaker and opening the gates of the Imperium gloriously and majestically to the law keeper. That the universe was an orderly thing, that the conduct of men must be orderly relationships, and that the individual who breaks the law of human integration must ultimately suffer. And law and punishment came down to us. And from the earliest days, men sought to understand those regulations and rules by which their common conduct was best expressed, and how they might live together in the most concord and with the greatest understanding, peace, and beauty of relationship. The symbol of law, of course, was Jupiter, and the Roman law was dedicated to him. The pharos of Alexandria, or Solomon's temple, represented to the ancients the concepts of mathematics. Mathematics, the great power that lighted men, that brought all minds in from the sea of doubt and insecurity into the safe harbor of learning. Of all the ancients, Saturn, or Cronus, was the father of gods and the father of time. Cronus was the principle of number, of the order and frequencies of numerical speculation. And under Cronus was exactitude, the exact experience of mathematics, not merely the adding up of your grocery bill or the various daily uses that we make of number, but the great concept of a universal exactitude, that numbers are instruments of magic, and that by means of them, men can unlock all the wonders of the world. And as Saturn was the most ancient of the gods, so mathematics was regarded as the most ancient and basic of all arts and sciences. For without mathematics, none of the others can exist. But mathematics can exist without them. Therefore, that which is independent is superior. That which is dependent is inferior. And as all exact learning is based upon mathematics, it is the father of sciences, even as Saturn or Cronus was the father of deities. Thus, the parallel is reasonably appropriate. To the marvelous monument of Halicarnassus, the mausoleum, was assigned architecture, because the records that we have of it indicate that it was the most perfectly integrated and perhaps architecturally the supreme member of the group. Emphasis here being placed upon architecture rather than upon the total concept. Everything was sacrificed to absolute architectural perfection of design. And we can only wish that some of these wonderful things had survived, so that we could see them. But that the mausoleum became the symbol of all architecture. Architecture as temple to God. Architecture as tomb to the honored dead. Architecture as symbol of statesmanship, of power, authority, and of the government of people. Architecture stepping in to house all the other instruments. Was also a reminder that architecture was a dynamic, making possible all bodies in which life may be incarnated. And that finally also, these bodies, like temples and shrines, must be destroyed or must collapse or must disappear away, so that all bodies that become glorious monuments must ultimately also become tombs. The next of the great arts, represented by the hanging gardens of Babylon, were what we would call today the art concept itself. In this case involving sculpturing, painting, the dance, art forms as we know them, poetry, because this great monument to Venus was dedicated to beauty, and supreme among all other arts was the art of living. And all arts are intended for one purpose, namely to make living beautiful, to make it possible for the individual to live not only efficiently and rationally, but with a grace, with a certain overtone of beauty, by which life is enriched and by which all utilities are justified. Labor without idealism is without reward, and very few persons have ever achieved greatly unless there was beauty in them, by which their labors were dedicated to some end greater than the mere gratification of ambition. Where such inner beauty does not exist, ambition leads only to tyranny and despotism. And the last of these, the Great Pyramid, under Mercury, tells us, of course, of the art of medicine, of healing, and of the power of the gods to bring health to the bodies of men. Anciently, medicine was part of religion, and Hermes was the physician of souls. For medicine, not only to the ancient, was a remedy for the body, but the greatest of all medicine was wisdom, which was the medicine for the sickness of the soul. And if the soul was sick, the body could not be well. But if in the case of sickness, the soul could be restored, then there was greater probability that the body would recover. Already in ancient times, man had conceived the psychological relationship between right attitude, right knowledge, right thinking, and the state of the corporeal nature of man. Therefore, that the sound body must be inhabited by the sane mind. And Mercury, as taking away ignorance, took away the great sickness for which learning is the only remedy. Thus, these concepts broaden the foundation of our indebtedness to ancient people and tell us something more of the expanding of our way of life. Now, the thought came to me that it might be interesting to return for a moment to the level of architecture. We are rather proud today of the things we do, or perhaps not only just the things we do, but the things that have been done. We also remember that in the collecting of the original group of seven wonders, man was comparatively unaware of that part of the world which was far from him, particularly the great structure of Asia. He had no knowledge that there were other worlds and other parts of this world far from his own abode. And in Asia and in other European and even in American architecture and structure, we have likewise wonders. Wonders that are very important and interesting. So I've collected a group, others could change it, but again, this group carries through to the original pattern of wonders which we can visit today. A few cases we may have to wait for more auspicious political situations, but the monuments still stand and are available to us. And most of them we can visit. Strangely, we have more or less picked them out ourselves. And nearly every tourist guide, nearly every fragment of literature about foreign countries features these. Features them perhaps as ancient man instinctively selected the old wonders. And in arranging them, we find they make very much of a pattern, because they are not so different from the group that we originally had. We remember the Colossus of Rhodes, standing with torch raised at the entrance of the city of Rhodes. We can hardly miss the analogy to the Statue of Liberty, which also stands with torch raised facing the sea, just as in the case of ancient Rhodes, and is certainly to be included among the wonders of modern architecture. A monument to liberty, as the older one was a monument to life. And to us, liberty and right are very closely involved. The great sanctuary of the ancient world, the one where the peoples came from everywhere to pay tribute and to enrich the shrine of the great lunar deity, Mother of Mysteries, Diana, goddess of the Ephesians, the Mother of Life, the marvelous principle in which the ancients recognized the mother who was forever a virgin. And this was the Temple of Diana. And it does not take a great deal of imagination to conceive its parallel in the greatest religious monument of the modern world, the Vatican at Rome. Dedicated also very largely to the Mother of Mysteries, dedicated to the World Virgin, and of course adorned and decorated as was the Temple of Diana with the wealth and treasures of countless peoples. The tremendous architectural achievement of the Vatican is undeniable, and the magnificent accumulation of treasure there is almost the same as we hear in the description of the great temple of Diana at Ephesus. Now, we are looking always for Zeus or Jupiter, as the ancients said, to bring us a great mass and weight. And at the very moment of its dedication, the planet Jupiter ruled one of the greatest structures of modern engineering, and that is the Empire State Building in New York, which was dedicated by the then governor, Alfred Smith, at the very moment of the dignification of the planet Jupiter. It became the symbol almost of our whole way of life, for everything we do has to be bigger. It may not always be better, but it will be bigger. And this tremendous monument of modern industry, this tremendous symbol of modern architectural efficiency, the largest and highest of our achievements. The concept of the Empire State Building as a wonder of the modern world is not unreasonable. Then we think of the great temple of Saturn, the Pharos or Lighthouse of Alexandria. And we remember the consternation caused in the last century by the tower that no one believed could be created, and which once created, no one believe anyone would ever understand, and that is the Eiffel Tower in Paris. Still a symbol of man's early engineering skill and one of the most ambitious and incredible achievements of its own time. We then find another important concept. The mausoleum of Halicarnassus was under Mars. What is the great mausoleum or the great architectural monument today that parallels it?